Gerhardt's back.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
From NJ1015.com, this is the new Jim Gerhardt Podcast.
Well, look at this. All is not lost. Hallelujah. I was kind of, exuberated here because I was, I had to get that out of my system. All is not lost. How about this? Now, well, our kids in school, you know, the young people, the post-pubescents who's, because of that process, apparently had their brains exploded with wisdom. They are out pretty much, trying to, they're stamping out insensitivity, as you know. It's on the college campuses and around the world. However, it's not like that everywhere. How about this notice now? I mean, kids all over the world are apparently not engaged in this. This is from a magazine called a news digest called The Week, which is an excellent little publication if you're interested in that. I quote, teenage girls and young women in Finland are going wild for a strange new sport, competitive hobby horse riding. there they go. All right, there they go. You see that now. No, no kidding. Some 10,000 Finns now compete in traditional equestrian events like dressage and show jumping, but sitting on sticks topped with stuffed horses' heads rather than on real animals. The sport isn't cheap. The article says aspiring jockeys can pay up to $200 for a fine hobby horse. Oh, my goodness, said one enthusiast. It's helped me a great deal that I can occasionally just go galloping into the woods with my friends. Oh, there you go. See, all is not lost. My golly, there's hope somewhere rising in the world. Speaking of that, I think we'll start here with a word from our sponsor.
Yes, the Gerhardt Goliath is now at your friendly Gerhardt showroom, attracting the biggest crowds in new car history. And because of the radical new design, the Gerhardt Goliath is within the reach of every pocketbook.
Yes, no fancy chrome, no costly trimming.
No money wasted on windows, expensive headlights, or wasteful grillwork.
Inside, no fancy frills either. No upholstery, no seats. You and your passengers stand in a straight Indian file fashion, saving valuable room and costly upholstery.
And because of no-nonsense planning by Gerhardt Research, the Goliath doesn't have a cumbersome steering wheel. The Goliath steers by a revolutionary new principle called Body English. You and your passengers simply lean in the direction you wish to go.
The Gerhardt Goliath is made of two large sheets of battleship armor, mounted on two ordinary bicycle wheels. And best of all, the Goliath is only 18 inches wide.
Yes, since the Goliath is just 18 inches wide, you park easily. Park up to 10 in a single garage, but most importantly,
because it's only 18 inches wide, the Gerhardt Goliath is the only car on the American road that doesn't have to wait in line in traffic jams. The Gerhardt Goliath goes right down the white line.
Yes, while others fret and fume parked on the expressway, your Gerhardt Goliath whizzes down the white line, drawing looks of envy and pulverizing everything in its path with its impregnable armor body.
And listen to this.
Other inferior models offer automatic transmission or four on the floor.
But the Gerhardt Goliath offers not only four on the floor, but listen,
three in the glove compartment,
two in the ashtray,
and one in the trunk. Let Detroit top that.
Don't wait. End traffic jams and waiting forever. Test drive the Gerhardt Goliath today at your friendly Gerhardt dealer. Another triumph of Gerhardt Research, where our motto is
profit is our most important product.
Now you can see what I did in my wasted youth in the radio. Well, we don't have a Gerhardt Goliath for you, but there is automotive news. This is big stuff. There is a complete game changer going on. I'd had the occasion over the last few weeks to talk with my good friend Mike Strisky, and you might have heard of Mike. He's sort of the Thomas Edison of New Jersey nowadays. Mike started off with the New Jersey State Department of Transportation. He and a bunch of young engineers were in what they call the Office of Research and Technology. This would go back to the 90s. Now, what these engineers had developed, these young guys, was what now is the hydrogen fuel cell. And I remember Mike used to come by the station And we'd go out in rides. First of all, they were working with alternate fueled cars. And they had developed, and again, this is in New Jersey, our own Department of Transportation. They had a hybrid, the first hybrid out, and they had the all-electric cars. They had not gotten into the hydrogen fuel cell yet adapted for a car. They had the engine. Remember these variable message signs you see on the highways in New Jersey? They are fueled by hydrogen fuel cells. That was the first thing anywhere, I think, that was ever done. It was part of Mike's work and his colleagues. And so he used to come by the station, and we'd go out for a ride, Eric Scott, Mike Lavelle, and Bob Williams. Bob and I were just talking about it. And we'd drive these cars. And this was amazing 20, 25 years ago. Because you'd pull up to a traffic light and you'd swear the car had stalled and everybody'd panic. Well, no, I mean, it was electric. There was no noise going on. But anyway, Mike got into that. Now, what happened was, now, as I understand it, now you think, also, first of all, they did enter some of their products in international competitions, one called the Tour du Sol, a Sol, in which they had a competition to go from one side of the country to another, California up to Maine, I think it was, for the most economy, the less use of fossil fuels. And Mike was winning it every year. And this was an international competition with all kind of alternate fuel cars. Now, the reason that they got out of the business, as I understand it, is not because the oil companies had threatened them and said, all right, you know, you cut this out or it's the bastinado for you. Showed them engines of the Spanish Inquisition like they did Galileo. Said, you better cut this out, kid. No, it was politically stopped. The funding for these projects was stopped by the government, the New Jersey government, because the politicians had figured out, it dawned on them, if this grows, this alternate fuel business grows, and people are using these, it's going to reduce the amount of revenue brought in by the gasoline tax. And as you know, it was the Transportation Trust Fund, which is funded by the gasoline tax, that was raided regularly every year for purposes that essentially got back to buying votes, pay for projects that would enhance the careers of certain political figures. And so they cut out the programming, or the support of that program and the funding. And so these people went into the private business. And the technology began to be developed. And now Mike is out in California, alternating between New Jersey and California. Toyota has come out with the hydrogen fuel cell car. They're actually producing them. And Mike's involved with them as a consultant. They're setting up the fueling stations. Also, something that Mike has developed that you can see is the world's first completely hydrogen fueled home, or all the energy comes from that. You go to Mike's house up in Hunterdon County, he might ride out to meet you in a golf cart, hydrogen fuel cell, right down, honest to Pete, right down to his weed whackers were fueled. Everything is fueled like that, and the whole house. And he became, that became the subject of some programs, the Science Channel and National Geographic and some. So Mike has been extremely busy now. And they are solarizing the homes of a lot of people in California. As you know, there's a lot of money out there, people who can afford this. And so that's what they're doing right now. But the point is that we are on the verge of a complete revolution in energy used for transportation. As a matter of fact, Mike is they're putting in a fueling station in Lodi. Now, I don't know why, but for some reason. So they expect this to grow. And the again, the opposition is apparently not coming as much from the oil companies, who figure, ha-ha, this is the way it's going to go. We got a lot of money. We'll jump into this too. So it seems to be on something of a fast track right now. So do not be surprised if you start seeing these cars available in New Jersey. And this would go beyond the Tesla, the electric car, because the range of these is enormous. Hydrogen is the most abundant thing or object in the universe. You can never run out of it. And if you can harness this combination of the sun with solar and this, it would solve everybody's energy problems forever. Now, there's a lot of industries that are not going to like that. The government, of course, with taxes down, they're not going to like it. As a matter of fact, the state of Washington has imposed a tax on people who buy hybrids to punish them for not paying as much gasoline tax. So, but there's been an alteration in that in New Jersey. I wasn't around, so I don't know exactly how. Maybe they'll keep the money in the trust fund. But that was the problem, that this technology was hindered for a long time, not by competitive energy producers, but by the government feeling that they might lose some tax money. All right, so, I wanted to give you a website. You can see Mike's home and see all of this, and I think you'll be fascinated by it. The website is hydrogenprojecthouse.org. Hydrogenhouse Project. Hydrogenhouseproject.org. And he also has a company that produces products that you might be interested in as well. So I think one day, I think you're going to have Mike's house up in Hunterdon County. Mike Strisky's house is going to be a tourist attraction like Menlo's Laboratory in Menlo Park. Okay, more to come. I tell you, I figured out this is what you got ahead of you, so you dasn't go anywhere. I'm going to reveal who the Antichrist is. No kidding. I figured it out over the weekend. And thanks to an event that involved former presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. No, not him. Not him. But he did try to ring the bell. And I'll tell you about that after a few words. Also, we have a contest now that I want you to know about. You can win something that is really neat to the Antichrist. I'm Jim Gearhart, speaking for my very, very good friends at CSI Group, CSICPA.com. You can get the story and you can meet these great people, Peter and Sandra Greco. They got the sons, Joe and Robert, John and James, and of course, all of their associates. Peter and Sandra built this up from back in the 70s into one of the largest financial institutions in the state of New Jersey. And I have to thank the CSI Group because after my accident, when I was pretty much on my own, you know, financially, had it not been the fact that Peter has handled my finances for a good number of years right now and had things set up, and I was very pleasantly surprised that, hey, you can make it. You can sit on the veranda of stately Gearhart Manor, lobbing silver dollars at the mockingbirds, sipping a julep and relaxing, thanks to the CSI Group. And these people can do wonders with your estate planning, too. I know we talk about them with the taxes. Talk to the CSI Group. Talk to Peter and his family about estate planning. They will set up a program for you that will certainly set you through the hard times when they occur. And even if they don't, you can make the good times even better. So talk for estate planning, any financial service, really. I urge you to do what I do because it's worked so well for me. And that is talk to the CSI Group, Peter and Sandra Greco. And that is at CSICPA.com. Go there and you'll see these wonderful people and all the great things they can do. So give them a call or talk to them. CSICPA.com. Oh, I have one more note on the automobile I thought you ought to know about. There is a movie available and you can find it. I mean, Amazon has it and it's available, called Who Killed the Electric Car? Now, back in the 90s, General Motors came out with an electric car. People loved it. They marketed it only in California. They never sold them. They only leased them to people for a 2-year lease just to see how it was going to go. People fell in love with them. However, ultimately, General Motors would not renew any of the leases. They took all of the cars back, and very quietly, because they were afraid there'd be an uprising, people loved these cars so much you'd had them, that they took all the electric cars, transported them back to some barren area, I believe it was in Oklahoma, and quietly destroyed them all. Why? Now, this was not the oil companies, the fuel companies, who were afraid of, you know, competition. This was done by the manufacturer. And the reason was they found out that the electric cars did not require any servicing. And the dealers were up in arms. Our service department, our service revenue, which is a very large part of the profit of the income of car dealers, was down, you know, 20, 25, 30% because nobody had to bring the car in. And so they destroyed the cars. And that was the end of it until all of a sudden, you know, here they start. That was probably in the 80s or the early 90s. Then they start coming back and we are here where we are now with the technology that I'd mentioned. But you might be interested in that movie. It's extremely well done. It's a documentary called Who Killed the Electric Car? Okay. I was watching this. It was a hearing in a Senate committee and Senator Bernie Sanders, who was the former presidential candidate who seems to have swilled down a whole trough of the Kool-Aid of ambition, there was a confrontation at a hearing for a presidential appointee. And the presidential appointee, under very hard questioning by Sanders, had confessed that he was a Christian. Now, read a little bit of this from the news report. This report says, first they came for the wedding planners and bakers. Then they came for the Catholic farmers and Baptist high school valedictorians. Now the secularists are coming after evangelistic public servants. On Wednesday, Russell Vaught, President Trump's nominee to be deputy director of the White House Office of Management and Budget, was viciously attacked by Senator Bernie Sanders over his Christian faith. Senator Sanders deemed Vaught unsuitable for office because he believed that salvation is found through Jesus Christ. He said someone with that set of a religious belief system is, quote, not someone who this country is supposed to be about. And apparently he got very, very vicious about this thing. And one of the former co-senators said, well, Senator Sanders is taking the Obama era's religious hostility and putting it on steroids. Well, here's what happened watching that. I was watching him in the hearing, and what he's saying is, in effect, that these nominees are people, and by extension, this would be anybody now in this country who has an idea different than those that are what we call politically correctly held, the globalists, whatever you want to call them, the far left. Anybody who has an opinion different from theirs should be annihilated, but at least should not be allowed to hold a job. Because he was avowedly confessed that he was a Christian. And according to Sanders, that says he must believe that non-believers, including specifically Muslims, will all end up in hell. Well, unhappily, and I'm getting so tired of people backing down on this, the poor beleaguered victim seemed to squirm and tap dance around the issue, and the more he danced, the more Sanders damned his professed beliefs. Now, I don't know, there's no way to prove this, but I think we're all beginning to feel that if the nominee said that he was a Muslim, they wouldn't have this problem. Why? I don't know why, except it seems to me that in some strong way that these left progressives, whatever they are, seem to feel a kinship with ISIS or the Taliban or the militant Muslim group, because they have the same goal in mind, which is the destruction of us and all of our values. So maybe they go easy on them. But he said, you'd have to believe that Muslims go to hell. Well, yeah, if he wants to believe that. Muslims believe Christians are going to go to hell. There's no problem. There are groups down in the Polynesian Islands that believe that the earth is actually sitting on the back of a giant green turtle. Who was actually running things. This is fine. The only difference is that the radical Muslims believe they have an holy obligation to help speed up the Christian journey into hell. And cutting off heads, blowing them to bits, doing them a favor, a courtesy to get this over with and get on it. The Christians have not been inclined to return the courtesy, so they probably have a little bit of a moral leg up. But to the point, what earthly or celestial difference does it make? Who believes what? Really? I mean, we're talking about beliefs. Now, putting these things into practice is another matter, but you can believe anything that you really want. The important thing is the existential predicaments of mankind, I would think. Oh, person kind, sorry about that. And the inevitability that we'd all be, better get our acts together before our mutual annihilation, which if you watch cable television, you will know is imminent. In which case, certainly all theology is moot, and there's nobody left to believe anything. So what is the point here? But one aspect of the Sanders versus Christian job seeker is that it rang a bell in my head. Now, I'm not a theologian, and my only attempt to dip a toe into the waters of theology, I guess, was when I was a child, We were asked in Sunday school, a little Sunday school music there, please. We were asked in Sunday school by the teacher at the Venton Baptist Church what we felt about some of the rites of the church. And I said, I may have been 11 or 12, I don't know. But somehow, for some reason, I said, well, I think the only problem with Baptists is that they don't hold them under long enough. Now, the Sunday school teacher maybe thought I was being humorous instead of sarcastic. She says, well, how long should the baptism last? And I said, well, you know, I guess till the bubbles stop. Well, far as I know, nobody has ever been excommunicated from the Venton Baptist Church. But I think I came close to being the first on that day. But back to the matter at hand. Now, Bernie Sanders implied that being a Christian made one unfit to hold a job. And then the bell went off in my head. But I was thinking, sick, sick, sick. And I repeated to myself, sick, sick, sick. Then the bell really struck. Remember the famous passage from the book of Revelations predicting the rise of the Antichrist that you find evangelicals talk about a lot? And so this passage describes the rise of the beast. And it says that in the day of the beast, no one can buy or sell without the mark of the beast, which is, it's translated as 666, you know, that business. Well, that pretty much assures that you can't hold a job, right? If you can't buy or sell, I mean, that's it. You've had it. Well, there you are. 666. Political correctness and its utter asininities. But, here's something that nobody ever thought about. Suppose the Antichrist is not a man. Suppose something like this is going to happen. It is an ideology. But a warped, nihilistic, militantly negative set of mind. A perversion of reason that can destroy a country, or atomic bomb can destroy a country. This can destroy the whole world. I mean, the bomb can do a city, but it looks like political correctness can do us all in. What if now picture this? This is my vision. What if St. John on the island of Patmos, when he was writing Revelations, was dictating it to a scribe? Now he got to that point, and he's giving the number. And he says, and you shall know by the sign 666. The scribe, who happens to be scratching his ear with his quill just then, didn't hear it right. He wrote down the number 666. Well, John really was talking about getting to the age of political correctness, which is distinguished by sick, sick, sick. All right. So think about that. Another thing that I thought about, there was a group I saw of some television things, a survivalist group, but they were into that too, the evangelicals. And they had come up with the notion that the Antichrist was really Prince Charles. really, they'd figured this out as Prince Charles of England, you know, the Queen's son. And I thought, hallelujah, because if he is the most they can work up as a symbol of evil, we got it made. I mean, there's no doubt who's going to win that particular battle. Okay, on that subject and a few others, a couple of more thoughts ahead. Hi, I'm Jim Gearhart, and absolutely delighted to get to talk with you again on behalf of Rob Dukansky at RE/MAX First Advantage. Rob, of course, is the agent, as I've told you so many times, that I would call without thinking twice if I wanted to sell my home. Rob will guarantee to sell your home at a price and a deadline that you agree to, or he'll buy your home. And working with Rob does not obligate you to anything. If you think Rob's not doing the job, and very few people have ever thought that, Rob will let you out of the contract. You're free and clear. You walk away friends. Now, how about this? Rob picked up an expired listing in Carteret where another agent had no success even after 199 days on the market. But with Rob's aggressive marketing and long list of qualified buyers, bam, sold in 12 days for top dollar. The Wall Street Journal ranked Bob the number one agent in the state of New Jersey and in the top 75 agents out of 1.2 million in the entire United States. Good man, good business, do great work. Call the agent I would call if I were selling my home, Rob Dukansky, 855-350-1015, 855-350-1015, or go online to robsellsnj.com. And boy, does he sell NJ. RobSellsNJ.com. Then you just go home, You get the boxes from the liquor store, and you start packing. Well, let's have a little background music, set up the matter we're going to talk about. Here we go. A little political correctness. Some of the politically correct news things going on this week. I particularly love some of these. One of them is Ms. Magazine. That was Gloria Steinem's feminist magazine. I didn't know they were still out, but they are. They have got themselves in an uproar right now over the fact that they're wondering why Wonder Woman, which is apparently a very successful movie, why didn't they make Wonder Woman a fat black woman instead of whoever's playing the role? And they're very, very upset about that because that certainly defies. You know, I was thinking about that, and I guess I was laughing at it. Then I thought, well, why not? Remember Nell Carter? Who was the, she played the witch in The Wiz. And she also, I think, was in a couple of sitcoms. Great actress, but she kind of fit that bill. And I can picture her because she was sort of feisty. And, of course, fit the physical form. I could see that. So, oh, speaking of the same kind of a thing here, in Chicago, an artist is being called a disgrace for depicting God as a black woman. So, you see, this cuts both ways. Now, that would not bother a progressive at all, but you get on the other side of the political spectrum, this seems to, you know, get people's shorts all in a bind. He had God depicted as a white-haired black woman reaching down from the clouds to touch the hand of a young woman. Variation on Michelangelo's creation, Adam. You know, as I said before, I'm not a theologian. But you know, in the Sistine Chapel, the picture of God, and here's Adam, and he's reaching, and I can see this caption that says, pull my finger. I told you I wasn't a theologian. Okay, what else is going on here? Thing that I think we told you about once before, there's a move afoot to ban the use of the word manhole for covers of utility holes. Now, I had a thought. First of all, I thought that was the stupidest thing I'd ever heard. You have to change it. It has to be a person hole or a utility hole. Now, you can't say manhole. And I don't know, why couldn't you say man, woman, transgender, or other hole? Maybe because it would be hard to get all that printed on top of the hole. But I thought in Los Angeles, which is a heart, sort of ground zero of a lot of this foolishness, what they could do is just ban manhole covers, take the covers off. And then, you see, this would help thin out the population because certainly the progressives would all be walking around texting hate messages to Donald Trump. And it, you know, well, it was a thought. A serious thought in the same vein. People, you got to quit apologizing. We've gotten to the point that anybody who claims he's a victim, and everybody claims they're victims of something or other, or they are offended, because unless you are offended, you are carrying around a burden of offense. Your life is not validated. That's one of the ancillary side values of political correctness, is that you're in the golden age of victimization. Now, this involved ex-Hall of Fame baseball player Mike Schmidt, the Philadelphia Phillies, third base, one of the greatest people that ever played the game. He's doing some broadcasting or some internet stuff. I'm not sure exactly in what form this took. But apparently the Phillies have a phenom, as they used to call him, Casey Stengel's words, playing in center field. This is a young guy who is an absolute whiz. Terrific player. He's going to be a future big star. But he doesn't speak English. Now, Schmidt, in commenting on that, said that there was talk about him because of his ability being a natural leader. But Schmidt says, you know, unfortunately, at this point, he cannot be the clubhouse leader, where you call the players in, you know, there's always a leader, a guy in there that takes over and lays the law down. Damn it, this time run when you bunt, or, you know, don't pussyfoot to first base, and to keep them in line. And he said he can't because of the language barrier. He wouldn't be able to do that. All hell breaks loose. This is offensive to members of the Spanish community, Hispanic community. Why? Which members? I'd like to see some names sometime. I can't imagine anybody of Hispanic heritage who would have the least bit of problem with the fact that you can't communicate, especially with a bunch of athletes who may not be the most highly educated people in the world, unless you have some kind of grasp of, you know, a good grasp of the language to do it in. What good would it do for him to call a meeting of the team and do a harangue about their poor play in Spanish and nobody knows what he's saying? That's the thing is that Mike Schmidt has to apologize. Why? Stop apologizing. You didn't do anything wrong. So that's I guess I'll let the political correct thing go at that. I read an article, and I think this is kind of tied into the same thing. And it was about a psychiatrist who has concluded that high anxiety, intense state of anxiety and stress, is now normal in this country. It is the norm. And I think you can understand that. There's very little tranquility that you see when you're sitting, go in the supermarket and watch people walking around loading up their carts with their cholesterol festival, you know, that they're going to put on. And everybody's got a mean look on their face, a hostile look, a defensive look. They're not mean people. They're not hostile people. You go to an intersection, sit in your car and look around. Do you see anybody smile? I mean, they're either scowling or picking their nose, and that doesn't, you know, you can't smile very well when you're doing that. But I think there's something to that, and it reminded me of a story of an American who was visiting the king. It had to be a well-placed American. I believe it was an industrialist or a person, you know, high in the world of finance or commerce or industry. And he had an audience with the king of one of the Himalayan countries, small countries. I don't know if it's Bhutan or Nepal, one of the small countries. And the American was chiding the king because the people were generally, you know, you didn't see three cars in every garage and the whole thing. And they weren't all, you know, on the phone ordering happiness for $19.95 plus shipping and handling, as we do. And he said, well, you know, it's sort of a pity you have a very low gross national product. And the king said, yes, but did you check to see our gross national happiness? I thought that was extremely revealing. And we don't have much gross national happiness. I wish we did. And I guess we're capable of it, but we seem to be sliding down another path. Okay, on that note, also, now don't forget the contest now we have running, because this is something that I didn't know what it was. Brian's going to tell you about that and explain it very well to you. But you can win something just by listening to us. And I had no idea until I looked it up to see what it was. And I found out that it's actually something of pretty considerable value. So that coming up. Have yourself a great week.
Thanks, Jim. I am so excited about this. You could win a pair of Beats headphones by Dr. Dre from the Jim Gerhart podcast and New Jersey 101.5. I have a pair of them myself. They are great. See the Beats contest at nj1015.com/contest. Find the box per episode number, which is easy for us, the date, so 615 this week, and enter the code BOHICA, BOHICA, for your chance to win. Stay tuned. We'll release more codes for more chances in next week's episode of Speaking Millennial, Forever 39, the Jim Gerhart podcast, and the New Jersey Guys podcast throughout the month of June. And good luck from New Jersey 101.5 and the Jim Gerhart podcast.
Thanks for listening to the new Jim Gerhart podcast.
Still cooking, and it's bigger than ever.
From NJ1015.com.